I think who I voted for would be the best to take care of Trump. Because Trump is, I'm sorry to say, an ass.
And that's a Canadian speaking. There's a polite one.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's fine.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair.
But it's better in Canada.
And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs.
Than it is here.
Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the airwaves and the internets around the country and the world. Blanketing planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow from bradblog.com. Thanks for joining us today for another thrilling edition of the Bradcast. Delighted to have you all here. All right, we will return to U.S. politics as usual momentarily with a sudden burst of enthusiasm for a third impeachment. Yes, a third impeachment of Donald J. Trump. And I got a perfect guest here to discuss it with us. Also, Desi Doyen will have our latest Green News report a little bit later this hour.
Yes, indeedy.
With all of the good news from the GNR that you are accustomed to. But first, some election news from our neighbors to the north, the Great White North. And frankly, I admit I do love this story, Des.
Yep.
Especially as it comes after all of these months of Trump hectoring, threatening Canada. That he was going to force them somehow to be our 51st state while winning their hearts and minds by imposing draconian tariffs on our longtime neighbor, our biggest trading partner, and our forever, at least until Donald Trump, best friend. Prime Minister Mark Carney's Liberal Party won Canada's federal election on Monday, capping a stunning turnaround in fortunes fueled by, yes, U.S. President Donald Trump's annexation threats and trade war, as AP reports it. Pierre Poilievre, and I'm going to have trouble saying his name all throughout the story, but Pierre Poilievre.
Poilievre. Yeah. Just say Poilievre. It's easy.
I think it's Poilievre.
But Americanize it at Poilievre. It's fine.
I'm going with Poilievre. Anyway, Pierre, a career politician, campaigned with Trump-like bravado that may have ultimately cost him and his party. The Liberals are now projected to win more of Parliament's 343 seats than the Conservative Party in Canada, though just before airtime, it looks like the Liberals may have fallen a boot 3 votes shy of winning an outright majority in Parliament, meaning they'll likely have to seek help from another smaller party to form their government. Though recounts are still expected, actually, in some districts. Canada, as I understand it, counts all of their ballots by hand.
What?
But it's not a good comparison for hand count proponents here in the States because, like most countries around the world, certainly those with parliamentary systems, there is just one race on each ballot. So hand counting is really quite simple. Now, I don't follow Canadian politics all that closely, but I follow a lot of cartoonists online for use in our Sunday tunes at bradblog.com. And a lot of them seem to be from Canada. So I see a lot of Canadian politics via Canadian cartoons each week. And as late as December of last year, it was pretty clear that Justin Trudeau's Liberal Party was in big, big, big trouble. And Pierre Poilievre, I said it right, and his Conservative Party, they were all set to absolutely clean the Liberal Party's clock. They were up by about 25 points in national polling as of December, and Poilievre all but was measuring the curtains in the Prime Minister's office as he was hoping to be Canada's version of Donald Trump. It was pretty much a done deal, it seemed, for many, many months until, well, as AP reports it today, the Liberals looked headed for a crushing defeat until the American president started attacking Canada's economy and threatening its sovereignty, suggesting it should become the 51st state. Trump's actions infuriated Canadians and stoked a surge in nationalism that helped the Liberals flip the election narrative and win a fourth straight term in power. Quote, "We were dead and buried in December," said David Lametti, a former Liberal Justice Minister. "Now we are going to form a government," he said. "We have turned this around thanks to Mark Carney," he said. He is, of course, talking about the current Prime Minister, Mark Carney, of the Liberal Party, who took over just after Justin Trudeau, facing enormous headwinds, stepped aside just a few months ago. The Conservative Party's leader, Pierre Poilievre, hoped to make the election a referendum on Justin Trudeau, whose popularity had declined toward the end of his decade in power as food and housing prices rose. But Trump attacked. Trudeau resigned, and Carney, a two-time central banker, became the Liberal Party's leader and prime minister. Trump, as AP reports it, was even trolling Canada on Election Day, suggesting on social media that he was, in fact, on the ballot and repeating that Canada should become the 51st state, an assertion that Canadians find deeply insulting. He erroneously claimed that the U.S. subsidizes Canada, writing, quote, "It makes no sense unless Canada is a state." Well, if Donald Trump was on the ballot on Monday, guess what? He lost yet again. Poilievre, who has been criticized for not taking a firmer stance against Trump, responded with a post of his own, quote, "President Trump, stay out of our election, eh?" He didn't really say a. I just added that. "The only people who will decide the future of Canada are Canadians at the ballot box," he posted before the polls closed. And it looks like the future of Canada was indeed decided by Canadians. Trump's truculence has infuriated Canadians, leading many to cancel U.S. vacations, refuse to buy American goods, and even vote early. A record 7.3 million Canadians cast ballots before Election Day this year. Quote, "The Americans want to break us so they can own us," said Carney in the run-up to the election. "Those aren't words," he added. "That's what's at risk." Remarks which he echoed in his victory speech with supporters on Monday night.
"As I've been warning for months, America wants our land, our resources, our water, our country. Never. But these are not idle threats. President Trump is trying to break us so that America can own us. That will never, ever happen. We are once again at one of those hinge moments of history. Our old relationship with the United States, a relationship based on steadily increasing integration, is over. The system of open global trade, anchored by the United States, a system that Canada has relied on since the Second World War, a system that, while not perfect, has helped deliver prosperity for a country for decades, is over. These are tragedies, but it's also our new reality. We are over the shock of the American betrayal. But we should never forget the lessons. We have to look out for ourselves. And above all, we have to take care of each other. Yeah. And my message to every Canadian is this. No matter where you live, no matter what language you speak, no matter how you voted, I will always do my best to represent everyone who calls Canada home.
Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney of the Liberal Party, the center-left Liberal Party, at his victory speech on Monday night. After Trump had seized the Canadian election spotlight, Poilievre's similarities to the bombastic American may have cost him say experts, including historian Robert Bothwell, who said Poiliev appealed to the, quote, same sense of grievance as Trump, and that, quote, the liberals ought to pay him, referring to Trump, about whom he said, quote, Trump talking is not good for the conservatives. Well, it certainly wasn't good for the conservatives or for Poiliev himself, the man who was almost universally expected to be the next prime minister of Canada. Hilariously, as Politico reports, Canada's conservative leader lost his own seat in Monday's election to cap off a stunning electoral meltdown that saw the Liberal Party rise from the polling doldrums to secure victory. Pierre Poiliev lost his seat in rural Ottawa to Liberal candidate Bruce Fanjoy. Poiliev first won the seat back in 2004. He held it for two decades. He is the first major party leader to be unseated at an election since 1993, when then Prime Minister Kim Campbell of the Progressive Conservatives lost her seat in an electoral bloodbath. That's fun. Meanwhile, back here at home, just after we got off the air on Monday, after covering a bunch of new polling from a whole bunch of major news outlets tracking Trump's first 100 days in his second term of office, finding both his overall ratings and on all of the issues that he's pushing and the stuff that he is breaking on really everything, Trump is now deep, deep underwater with the American people. It's not just Canadians who hate him. They really do not like him here in the U.S. either, or his policies, or the way that he's carrying them out. Several polls showing his overall approval rating at just 39%. Not even 100 days into office, and just huge margins in opposition to literally everything that he has done. We talked about it on yesterday's show. If you missed it, you can download it at brandblog.com for free, thanks to folks like you who donate to our efforts. But just after we got off air, I received an email from a longtime listener, Pouffet, to bradcast@brandblog.com, who observed, one question I didn't hear in the polling was, do you think the president should be impeached? He adds, thank you for all the great reporting, keeping us all informed. Love you both, Pouffet. Well, love you back, Pouffet, and great point.
Yes.
None of the polls that I covered had asked about impeachment, as far as I could tell. But as it turns out, there was a poll that asked about impeachment, believe it or not. As reported by Jessica Corbett at Common Dreams on Monday, new polling shows a majority of U.S. voters support Congress impeaching U.S. President Donald Trump a third time, which would break a record that Donald Trump set during his first term when he was impeached twice by the House of Representatives but never convicted by the Senate, even though in the second impeachment, a bipartisan majority of senators did vote to remove him from office for inciting the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. A polling memo published Friday by ASO Communications and Research Collaborative shows that just a few months into Trump's return to the White House, 52% of likely voters across the ideological spectrum somewhat or strongly support impeaching him again. That includes 84% of Democrats, 55%, a majority, of independents, and even 20% of his fellow Republicans. The survey was conducted from April 18 to 21 by Data for Progress. They asked 1,171 respondents, so it was a pretty good-sized poll, quote, thinking of an impeachment effort led by Democrats in Congress, which of the following comes closest to your view, even if none are exactly right? The largest share of respondents, again, including a majority of independents, said that Democrats in Congress should attempt to impeach Trump because they have a duty to remove a president that has violated Americans' constitutional rights and the law. The Friday memo notes that support for impeachment is now on par with levels seen during the most recent impeachment proceedings, even before a full public case has been presented. Although the GOP now narrowly holds both chambers of Congress, Democratic Congressman, U.S. Rep. Sri Thanadar of Michigan filed 7 articles of impeachment against Donald Trump on Monday. Here is the Indian-born congressman announcing those articles on Monday.
Donald Trump has already done real damage to our democracy, but defying a unanimous 9-0 Supreme Court ruling, that has to be the final straw. It's time we impeach Donald J. Trump. The court said the wrongfully deported Kilmer Garcia must be allowed to return and receive due process. Trump ignored it. He ignored the Constitution. He ignored the very checks and balances that keep our democracy intact. This isn't an isolated incident. It's part of a dangerous, deliberate pattern. That's why today I introduced a resolution to impeach Donald J. Trump, outlining 7 articles of impeachment. And most importantly, he is attempting to consolidate unchecked power and erode the constitutional limits of the presidency. In this country, we have presidents, not kings. That's not just misconduct, it's impeachable misconduct. This isn't leadership, it's tyranny. If we let this stand, we are saying the president is above the law, that the United States Constitution is optional. I won't be silent, and I'm calling on all my colleagues, Democrats, Republicans, and independents, to stand up with me. Enough is enough. Donald J. Trump must be impeached.
Good job, Congressman. That was Congressman Sri Thanadar of Michigan. More on his articles in a moment. And more articles still may soon be coming from other Democrats in Congress, according to The Hill. In response to the polling released on Friday, Free Speech for People's campaign director, Alexandra Flores Quilty, declared that, quote, Americans across the country refuse to let Trump and his allies destroy our democracy. She said it's up to Congress to do their job defending the Constitution and impeach and remove Donald Trump from office for his grave abuses of power. But if impeachment failed to work the first 2 times, at least when it came to removing Trump from office during his first term, is it really worth trying again? Well, constitutional law expert, author of several books on impeachment, and Free Speech for People's founder and president, John Bonifaz, joins us next to discuss exactly that on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman, and you really don't want to touch that dial.
Hey, this is Desi. The broadcast and the Green News Report survive thanks to you and your support. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate today to help us stay independent every day over your public airwaves. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Yeah, we do. Welcome back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com. With new polling late last week finding a 52% majority of American voters strongly or somewhat support impeachment of Donald Trump, that includes a majority of independent voters. As reported last night by Michigan's nonprofit news outlet, Michigan Advance, Detroit's Democratic Congressman Sri Thanadar on Monday brought 7 articles of impeachment against President Donald Trump, saying the president has, quote, repeatedly demonstrated that he is unfit to serve and represents a clear and present danger to our nation's constitution and our democracy. No, you are not listening to a rerun from 2019 when Trump was first impeached on charges of abuse of power and obstruction of Congress related to his withholding of funds from Ukraine as he attempted to strong-arm its president, Volodymyr Zelensky, into announcing a phony investigation of Joe Biden and his family. Nor is this a rerun from January of 2021, when Trump was impeached an historic second time on charges of incitement of insurrection following his January 6 attack on the U.S. Capitol in hopes of stealing the 2020 presidential election. In both of those cases, he was acquitted by the U.S. Senate, which requires 67 votes out of 100 seats to remove a president from office, though in that second impeachment, a bipartisan 53-47 majority of senators voted to remove him from office, even if that fell short of the two-thirds of the Senate needed to convict and remove him from office. No, in fact, you are listening to an all-new broadcast in 2025, when after no more than 100 days in office, Trump's outrageously and clearly lawless behavior has, yes, triggered yet another attempt to remove him from office, this time in his second term as president. In a statement from Congressman Thanedar's office explaining his reasons for introducing articles of impeachment against Donald John Trump, he pointed to, quote, sweeping abuse of power, flagrant violations of the Constitution, and acts of tyranny that undermine American democracy and threaten the rule of law. Trump's unlawful actions, he said, have subverted the justice system, violated the separation of powers, and placed personal power and self-interest above public service. We cannot wait for more damage to be done. Congress must act, said Thanedar. Each article in his articles of impeachment alleges violations of the Constitution, with Thanedar's office breaking it down thusly: obstruction of justice and abuse of executive power, including denial of due process, unlawful deportations, defiance of court orders, and misuse of Trump of the Department of Justice, usurpation of appropriations power for dismantling congressionally established agencies, and impounding, in other words, failing to spend federal funds that were appropriated by Congress, abuse of trade power and international aggression, including imposing economically damaging tariffs and threatening military invasion against sovereign nations, violation of First Amendment rights through retaliatory actions against critics, media, and attorneys exercising constitutionally protected speech, creation of an unlawful office by establishing the Department of Government Efficiency, or so-called DOGE, and unlawfully empowering Elon Musk to unilaterally violate the Constitution. Bribery and corruption involving dismissing criminal cases, soliciting foreign emoluments, and extortionate settlements for personal and political gain. And the seventh article of impeachment for tyrannical overreach, seeking to consolidate unchecked power, erode civil liberties, and defy constitutional limits on presidential authority. Quote, this is not about partisanship, the congressman said in his statement. It's about protecting our democracy and ensuring that no one, not even a president, is above the law. Congressman Thanedar said that the articles have been in the works for months, and it should be noted he is not the only Democrat likely to file impeachment charges. Louisiana's Congressman Al Green has promised the same. Neither of the men, however, appear to be the first to call for Trump's impeachment in a big way in his second term. On Inauguration Day, January 20, 2025, the first day of Trump's second term of office, 100 long days ago, a nonpartisan campaign led by FreeSpeechForPeople.org introduced a petition at ImpeachTrumpAgain.org calling on the U.S. Congress to initiate an immediate impeachment investigation into Trump's violations of the Emoluments Clause and into his unlawful, corrupt campaign practices. Quote, Trump's return to the White House poses an unprecedented threat to our democracy, said John Bonifaz, president of Free Speech for People and co-author of The Constitution Demands It, The Case for the Impeachment of Donald Trump, in the group's January 20 press release, adding, quote, during his campaign and in the months before his inauguration, Donald Trump engaged in unlawful, unconstitutional conduct and threatened more. He has once more positioned himself to abuse the office for personal profit and power in violation of clear constitutional commands and at the expense of our democratic institutions, constitutional precedent, and the safety of our country's most vulnerable. That was on day one. In the 100 days since then, as the campaign's petition to impeach Trump again was signed by more than 250,000 Americans by the first week of March, the campaign has argued that, quote, since taking office, Trump has committed a growing list of impeachable offenses. Unless and until Congress takes its constitutional impeachment obligations seriously, Trump will continue to entrench his corrupt interests, usurp authority committed by the Constitution to other government branches, and abuse his power to the detriment of our democracy and the people of our country. All of which, frankly, is very difficult to argue with. The campaign goes on to detail 17 reasons now that they believe Trump should be impeached by the U.S. House immediately at the impeachtrumpagain.org website. And joining us now, I'm delighted to say, is constitutional law expert John Bonifaz, co-founder and president of Free Speech for People, a national nonprofit, nonpartisan organization leading in the national fight in long challenging big money and politics and corruption at the highest levels of government, as well as fighting for free and fair elections. John Bonifaz, it has been too long, my friend, but welcome back to the broadcast, sir.
Great to be back with you, Brad. Thanks so much.
So let's step through some of this, John. As noted, your own group, FSFP, and the coalition at ImpeachTrumpAgain.org were demanding impeachment on day one. Before we get to what he has done to merit that in the 99 days or so since then, why was he constitutionally eligible, for want of a better word, for impeachment on day one, as you saw it?
Yes. Well, starting out, he refused to divest from his business interests all over the world in direct violation of the emoluments clauses of the Constitution, the foreign and domestic emoluments clauses, treating the Oval Office as a profit-making enterprise at the public expense. He also committed this same abuse of power on day one of his first term. And of course, as you know, we launched a campaign co-led that day with Roots Action in 2017 for that violation. But in addition to that, we highlighted on day one of this presidential term that he had engaged in unlawful, corrupt practices during the 2024 presidential campaign. And it's important to note that the framers understood that if you obtain power in a corrupt way, that is an impeachable offense. So we know, of course, that he conspired with his ally, billionaire Elon Musk, to literally pay people in order to vote, an illegal operation that that Elon Musk was engaged in, giving out money for people who registered to vote in the swing states. We know that he threatened violence against people. He threatened violence in Springfield, Ohio. He and his vice presidential candidate at the time, now Vice President Vance, that led to threats and bomb threats to people in Springfield against the Haitian immigrant community. Mm-hmm. The list goes on, and we detailed this on our site and impeached Trump again on day one.
Now, as I recall, since you mentioned emoluments there, the original emolument complaint in federal court for violation of Article 1, Section 9, Clause 8 of the U.S. Constitution, known as the Foreign Emoluments Clause, which prevents federal officials from accepting gifts, titles, benefits from foreign states without congressional approval. There was a lawsuit for accepting gifts via foreign nations through his D.C. hotel. That case was eventually, if I remember correctly, dismissed as moot by the U.S. Supreme Court after Trump was out of office the first time. That was a legal case as opposed to an impeachment article in Congress. But can that legal case, John, be reopened at the Supreme Court now that it is seemingly no longer a moot issue now that he's back in office?
No question about it, can be reopened. It would not be able to be reopened at the Supreme Court. It would have to be initiated yet again at the district court level. And this highlights why, as much as we agree and are participating in efforts to challenge Trump's outrageous and unconstitutional actions in court. The fact is that the courts are not going to move at the same pace that's necessary with respect to Congress and the role that it plays on impeachment. And that case is a good example of it. It took past the presidential term for the Supreme Court ultimately to rule, and it was ultimately ruled as moot, as you highlight. So the courts have a role here, but Congress ultimately has the role to deal with a president who tramples on the Constitution, engages in abuses of power, and merits the invocation of the impeachment clause.
Okay, so since January 20, you guys have offered, frankly, a breathtaking, if totally understandable, 17 reasons why you believe that he should be impeached. I suspect you could probably add more. So the most difficult question I may have for you today, John Bonifaz, want to give me quickly your top three reasons, if that is even possible, for him to be impeached at this point?
Yes, I mean, we actually have an order on our site to impeach Trump again, and I would lead with the first few that we have, which are illegal kidnapping, detention, and removal of U.S. residents, illegal and unconstitutional removal of U.S. residents, migrants, and asylum seekers to foreign prisons, and I might add foreign gulag prisons where people never see the light of day after that, unlawfully attempting to deport immigrants for peacefully protesting. And, you know, I would add the two attacks on Article 1 and Article 3. Article 1, of course, is the article of the Constitution that establishes Congress and all of its powers. He's unconstitutionally usurped Congress's powers, most famously by freezing funds that Congress had appropriated. Only Congress has that appropriation power. And then, of course, he's defied court orders now repeatedly, attacking the Article 3 branch of government, the judiciary. And this is a serious threat to our democracy and our republic when the Supreme Court itself issues an order that Kilmer Abrego Garcia needs to be returned, facilitate his return, and then the Trump administration, Donald Trump, completely defy it.
Yep.
This is an example exactly of why this president deserves immediate impeachment and removal from office.
On the issue of impounding money, in other words, money that was allocated by Congress, signed by the president, and so forth, and sometimes that president was Joe Biden, sometimes that president was Donald Trump in his previous term, money that was supposed to be spent by law. Reuters is reporting today, John, that the Trump administration has withheld more than $436 billion in approved spending, according to Democrats. That is almost $500 billion in statutorily appropriated funds that Trump is seemingly unlawfully refusing to spend as Congress and the president intended him to. Given the long odds of Congress actually doing anything about that via impeachment, can groups at the same time, like Free Speech for People, go to court to at least try to hold him accountable for impounding those funds in violation of the Constitution?
Yes, and there are cases pending that are challenging the impoundment of those funds to various agencies. And some courts have already said in certain of those cases that he needs to release those funds, and he's defied those court orders. So we're dealing here with somebody who is lawless in the Oval Office. He is a reckless, lawless person who claims to be president of the United States when really he's trying to act like a monarch and a tyrant. And we have to remember, Brad, that the framers were very clear in setting up the Constitution that they would have three co-equal branches of government. We were not to be a nation governed by a monarch or a tyrant based on the experience that the framers had from the kings of England and so forth, the monarchs of that century. And so the framers were very clear that this was going to be a different nation governed by a president checked by a Congress, a co-equal branch of government, and by a judiciary, a co-equal branch of government. But importantly, they put an extra guardrail into the Constitution in addition to those co-equal branches of government, and that is the impeachment clause. They were also well aware that there might come a day when a president would so engage in trampling on the Constitution and so engaged in violently, violating rule of law, mm-hmm. that there would need to be a measure to allow for the impeachment and removal of that president. And that's the place we are now in. This is the very remedy the framers put into the Constitution to deal with this lawlessness coming from the Oval Office.
Okay, well, with that in mind, it takes a simple majority vote in the U.S. House, which is currently controlled, if just barely, by Republicans, to adopt articles of impeachment and then send them to the U.S. Senate for a trial to consider removal of the president, where a two-thirds vote in favor, that's 67 votes out of 100 seats, are required in the upper chamber, which is also controlled by Republicans, to remove a president from office. So I suspect when people hear about this campaign, yours, Congressman Thanedar's newly introduced articles, well, they may think, oh, not again. We did that twice in the first term. It didn't work. Why should we try it again? So let me put that question to you, John Bonifaz. Why try it again when it would seem bound to fail, even if it does somehow get adopted in the U.S. House? It seems like he'll be, as he likes to say, acquitted once again in the Senate. No?
We have three responses to this question. First, we either have a constitution or we don't. We either have an impeachment clause or we don't. If we do not invoke it at this very moment in the face of this lawlessness coming from this president, then what's the point of having the constitution at all? And what's the point of having the impeachment clause? We are not going to give up on this idea of a constitution in which a president must be accountable to the people and to the other article branches of government, Article 1, Article 3 branches of government. Second, we normalize these high crimes when we don't name them for what they are. These are not policy disputes. These are abuses of power. And this president must be held accountable under the impeachment clause for these high crimes. And third, members of Congress take the same oath that Donald Trump took to protect and defend the Constitution. They have a duty to stand up at this critical moment in our history and defend the Constitution in the face of this attack by this president on the rule of law and on our democracy. And that's why we need to advance this. We need to build the case now for impeachment of this president, even if the votes are not there today to pass those articles of impeachment. We need to build that case now and demand the impeachment and removal of this lawless president.
Back in February, Democratic New York Congressman Dan Goldman, who, as I recall, he helped lead on at least one of the first two impeachment hearings in the U.S. House, the impeachment of Trump in his first term before he was eventually elected to Congress. He had this to say back in February when he was asked about another impeachment of Donald Trump by the Scripps News Service. Let me play this and I'll get your thoughts on it, John.
Donald Trump has probably committed dozens of impeachable offenses. He's violating the Constitution right, left, and center. The reality is the Republicans control the House and they control the Senate. And not only are they in control in the majority and therefore they would have to lead any kind of impeachment investigation, but they have demonstrated such a lack of spine and will and determination to even just uphold their own power. They're giving away their own authority in Congress and just turning it over to Donald Trump. So regardless of whether or not there are impeachable offenses, it's not happening. And we need to focus on other ways of providing accountability on Donald Trump.
That was New York's Democratic Congressman Dan Goldman, February 19th, saying impeachment is not happening. Your response, John Bonifaz, to Congressman Goldman there.
You know, Congressman Goldman, I hope, has shifted his view since that time, because it really is an outrageous statement to make that there is not any point in advancing these articles of impeachment or this call for impeachment at this time, because the Republicans allied with the president control the Congress. He knows, just like every other member of Congress knows, that there's a rule in the House rules that allows for a privileged resolution of impeachment to be brought to the floor and to force a floor vote within two business days. He knows that. And yet he's not telling the American people that in that statement. He knows that if they introduce articles of impeachment, it will force a four-floor vote. And those who are on the side of democracy and the Constitution and the rule of law will be able to stand up and vote for the impeachment of this president. And everyone else will be on record for standing on the sidelines in this moment of history or standing behind this tyrant. We need to take that vote multiple times. There's no reason whatsoever that there should not be articles of impeachment forced for a floor vote every day in this House of Representatives during this lawless administration. So I have very little patience, quite frankly, for any member of Congress who has taken an oath of office to protect and defend the Constitution and then stands on the sidelines in this critical moment of our history while our democracy crumbles. They need to stand up. They need to fight for our democracy and for our Constitution. That starts with the very power they have to advance articles of impeachment against this lawless president.
Does that mean, John, that Congressman Sri Thanadar of Michigan, the articles that he introduced on Monday, does that mean those will have to come up for a vote in the U.S. House?
He has been asked that question as to whether or not he's going to force a floor vote, and he has said that he wants to ultimately have a floor vote, but he's not yet forcing it. So we don't know yet from his office whether he's going to force that floor vote very soon. We hope he does. It is a very important first step that he's taken in introducing these articles of impeachment. But, you know, if you just send them to the House Judiciary Committee, we know what's going to happen there. They're going to just not even be taken up, and there will be no debate. The value of forcing a floor vote is it forces that debate. And there's multiple articles of impeachment to be brought to the floor. It doesn't just have to be Representative Thanadar's articles, which are very good, but there's many others, as we've identified on our site at Impeach Trump Again. And Congressman Green, as we know, has also pledged to introduce articles of impeachment. He has said he's going to force a floor vote. It's important to remember he forced three floor votes in 2017, and each and every time, more members of Congress joined him on record in calling for impeachment of Donald Trump. That has to happen again. And look, I understand that people, you know, want to see everything tried. We should try everything. I agree we should go to court where we can go to court. I agree we need to be in the streets and mobilize, you know, people all over the country. But we cannot let members of Congress, you know, off the hook here. They have a responsibility. They're the ones who have the ability to advance articles of impeachment, and they took an oath to defend the Constitution, and that's the precise remedy they have in the Constitution to address this threat and attack on our republic. It's articles of impeachment.
And let me be clear here, John, because you and I have been talking about impeachment on this show for, what, 15, 20 years at this point. You are nonpartisan when it comes to issues of impeachment. You led campaigns for, I think you testified in Congress in favor of impeachment of Democrats like Bill Clinton and Republicans like George W. Bush and Donald Trump alike. Last year in July, this has been bugging me since then, John, the corrupted and Trump-packed Supreme Court found a completely non-existent presidential immunity clause in the U.S. Constitution, essentially, as they see it, allowing presidents to violate pretty much any criminal law that they like while serving as president. So, question for you, John Ponifaz, constitutional law expert. If a president is now allowed to commit crimes, how can he be held accountable for high crimes and misdemeanors if it's not a crime, as Nixon said, and the court, and I'm sure Trump now apparently agrees, it's not a crime when a president does it. Does that make it now impossible to impeach someone?
No, not at all. So it's important to distinguish the accountability that can happen in the criminal justice system from the accountability that happens through the impeachment process. There is no requirement whatsoever that a president be held accountable first in a court of law for having committed a crime under the federal criminal code or in a state court setting. There's no requirement whatsoever. This is a different question. High crimes does not refer to actual crimes of under federal criminal code, but rather high crimes meaning attack on the state, attack on the country. These are crimes against our democracy, crimes against the republic. That's what we mean by high crimes, and the framers were very clear on that. So there's zero requirement that there be some kind of criminal conviction in order for there to be an impeachment process to go forward. That decision you cite was an abomination. There's no question that they got it wrong, in our view. Trump v. United States provides this immunity for so-called official acts for any kind of criminal misconduct. But even then, we should look at, for example, the top impeachment ground we have: illegal kidnapping, detention, and removal of U.S. residents, and illegal and unconstitutional removal of U.S. residents, migrants, and asylum seekers to foreign prisons. There is actually criminal liability associated with this as well, separate and apart from the impeachment clause. We have actually issued a letter to the state attorney general of Massachusetts and to the Middlesex County district attorney covering Somerville, Massachusetts, urging that they open a criminal investigation into all senior officials of the Trump administration, including Donald Trump, who engaged in conspiring to kidnap Ramesa Ozturk off the streets of Somerville, the Tufts University student, PhD student, for whom there was no basis to remove her visa. It was an attack on the First Amendment. And everything else that transpired after that was the process of a kidnapping. So official acts does not cover a kidnapping. And that's our point in that letter. And we do think that state AGs have a role here as well.
And going beyond the idea that they don't need to be convicted of a crime to be impeached, in truth, they don't even actually have to have committed a crime. All of this is up to Congress. It's in their hands, as I understand it. If the House wants to impeach a president, a majority agrees, they send it to the Senate. There is a trial. If 67 sitting senators agree that he has committed high crimes and misdemeanors, even if that high crime is, I don't know, Barack Obama wearing a tan suit in the White House press room, if the Senate and the House decide those are removable offenses, then so be it. They can move forward no matter what the law says, correct?
They can move forward, and I wouldn't say it no matter what the law says. They can move forward based on their decision that it is a high crime for which he should be convicted. But again, the law also intersects here because many of these grounds are also violations of the law, and he should be held accountable, as I've highlighted with respect to the matter in Massachusetts. He should be held accountable for his role in committing actual crimes under the federal criminal code and state criminal laws. But separate and apart from that, you're right. High crimes are crimes against the state, crimes against our democracy, and that's what the impeachment process is for.
And very quickly, I got about 30 seconds. John Bonifaz, what do you expect or perhaps hope to see from Congress as this campaign and Trump's presidency move forward? And what can regular old Americans, for example, listening to this program, do to help to move all of that forward as you see it?
Well, we continue to fight for this process to move forward at impeachtrumpagain.org. We urge people to join us. More than 400,000 Americans all across the country have now joined us in signing the petition at impeachtrumpagain.org. And look, I think that there's going to be more momentum as the days go on, as more and more people recognize that this president must be held accountable for his lawlessness and for his abuses of power. So I'm hopeful that we will see more members of Congress standing up, that there will be more pressure on members of Congress to stand up as people all across the country demand accountability from this lawlessness out of the White House.
John Bonifaz is the co-author of the 2018 book with Ron Fine and Ben Clements, The Constitution Demands It, The Case for the Impeachment of Donald Trump. He is the co-founder and president of FreeSpeechForPeople.org, now leading the ImpeachTrumpAgain.org campaign. You can get more information there, and you can follow them on Blue Sky at FSFP, and you can find John there as well. He is John Bonifaz on Blue Sky and Twitter. John, always an honor to speak with you, sir. Please stay in touch as this campaign moves forward. I got a lot more questions to ask you in the future, I bet.
Brad, thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Thanks, John. Okay, here we go again.
Yes, indeed.
Quick break here, and here we go again with Desi Doyen and the Green News Report. That is next on your broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. You're listening to the broadcast. We are 100% listener-supported thanks to listeners like you who stop by bradblog.com/donate. Good Lord, we are not even 100 days, or just at 100 days, into this guy's second term in office. We're already talking about impeachment. Where the hell is all of this going to go for the next something like 1,600 days that are left between now and the time he is definitely gone. Or at least almost definitely gone.
Well, if the situation fits, you have to apply the Constitution. That's the idea.
Oh, there's an idea. Let's do that. In the meantime, let's get to it. Our latest Green News Report.
If it's denied, then the president is saying that that money will not be available to help our families rebuild.
Trump administration denies disaster aid for Arkansas, Kentucky, and other states.
Traffic lights are out. Businesses are in the dark. Public transportation at a standstill.
Nationwide blackouts hit Spain and Portugal. Plus, Trump fires all scientists working on the U.S. government's flagship climate change assessment.
All of that madness and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Yeah, I guess destroying the planet is one way to advance your policy agenda. I mean, you can't be trans if there's no planet.
Excellent point. This is your Green News Report. I'm gonna soak up the sun. Okay, Desi Doyen, now they're coming for the volunteer scientists. I guess that's going to save them a lot of money, eh?
The Trump administration has dismissed hundreds of scientists working on the federal government's premier report on how human-caused global warming is affecting the country. The National Climate Assessment is required by Congress every 4 years to inform policymakers, industries, and the public about how rising temperatures will affect human health, food and water supplies, transportation, energy production, and the U.S. economy, and to help every region prepare as climate impacts worsen.
Well, science doesn't exist if you fire all the scientists.
That seems to be the idea. Last week, the administration cut the program's funding, so it is unclear how or if the mandated report will proceed.
Even though it's the rule of law.
Yep. It's not great timing to fire America's top climate scientists. A new analysis finds that 2025 just saw the second hottest start to any year on record since record keeping began in the mid-1800s. Mm. Scientists at Carbon Brief, a UK climate data organization, announced that the first quarter of 2025, from January to March, was the second warmest quarter ever recorded globally, running just a hair behind 2024, the hottest year on record. That is concerning since the heat occurred during a mild La Nina weather pattern in the Pacific, which usually cools global temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, a fascinating new study estimates that the world's biggest oil companies have caused $28 trillion in climate damages. Let me say that again, $28 trillion in damages, and that is likely an underestimate. The peer-reviewed study in the journal Nature examined the known emissions data from burning the products of more than 100 of the world's biggest carbon producers, like gasoline or coal-fired electricity. They then calculated each company's contribution to warming and estimated economic losses caused by it. State-owned oil giants Saudi Aramco and Russia's Gazprom are the top two, responsible for roughly $5 trillion in damages each. Investor-owned majors Exxon, Chevron, and BP collectively caused another $5 trillion in damage. The study's authors say the data should assist states and local governments suing big oil companies for billions of dollars in damage caused by climate change. Speaking of damages, power is slowly being restored in Spain and Portugal after nationwide blackouts crippled both countries on Monday.
Yeah, why?
As we go to air, that cause is still unknown, but Portugal's grid operator said that, quote, extreme variations in Spain's temperature triggered anomalies in major transmission lines. That set off a domino effect across the two countries' interconnected system, shutting down trains, traffic, airports, phones, internet, water systems, and other critical infrastructure.
Like ATMs were down.
Yes. Now, officials say no indication that a cyber attack was involved. Here in the U.S., the Trump administration is cutting off federal disaster aid to several states, forcing them to bear the full cost of extreme weather disasters. Trump denied a disaster aid request from the Republican governor of Arkansas, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, his own former White House press secretary, after deadly tornado outbreaks and generational flooding in March, saying, quote, "You have enough resources in the state and local governments in order to respond to these natural disasters."
Good luck to you, lady.
Sanders is appealing the denial. In an interview with local news, Grant Tenniel, chair of the Arkansas Democratic Party, underscored the stakes.
In rural Arkansas, a not very big disaster can wipe a town away. And without assistance to rebuild, nobody will.
Trump has also denied disaster aid to Kentucky, Washington State, and North Carolina, an ominous sign as summer heat, hurricanes, and wildfires are looming.
Do we need any more ominous signs at this point? For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. You know, I'm wondering if Donald Trump is rejecting if federal aid down to Alabama. Where is she from? Arkansas.
Yes,
to
Arkansas.
Sarah Huckabee Sanders, so that he then can say, oh, well, that's why I'm not giving billions of dollars to help rebuild California either. It's not a partisan thing. I just hate everybody.
Well, that is a valid idea, and I think it also brings out the idea that you have to be ready for disasters this year, because help may not be coming, at least not from the federal government that is run by Donald Trump.
Thank you very much, our producer, Desi Doyen, and thanks to my guest today, John Bonifaz of Free Speech for People and their ImpeachTrumpAgain.org campaign, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other, you can download them all for free at bradblog.com. Thanks to those of you who hit a donate button while you're there. And yes, we could really, really use your help right now. So come on by bradblog.com, hit a donate button, or go straight to bradblog.com/donate. Thank you very much in advance. Drop me email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com, and you will find me on the social medias, especially Blue Sky, at The Brad Blog. We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.